on page one in the introduction. It says the role of teaching and learning is actually reversed in the thinking of the world. The reversal is characteristic. In other words, it seems as if the teacher and the learner are separated. It looks like the teacher is giving something to the learner rather than to himself. Further, the act of teaching is regarded as a special activity in which one engages only a relatively small proportion of one's time. The course, on the other hand, emphasizes that to teach is to learn, so that the teacher and learner are the same. The course also emphasizes that teaching is a constant process. That means teaching goes on every moment of the day and continues into sleeping thoughts as well. Page one of the teacher's manual. To teach is to demonstrate. There are only two thought systems, and you demonstrate that you believe one or the other is true all the time. From your demonstration, others learn, and so do you. The question isn't whether you will teach, for you have no choice in this. The purpose of the course might be said to provide you with the means of choosing what you want to teach on the basis of what you want to learn. You can't give to someone else, but only to yourself. And you give to yourself, you learn through teaching. Teaching is but a call to witnesses to attest to what you believe. Teaching is a method of conversion. Teaching isn't done by words alone. Any situation must be to you a chance to teach others what you are and what others are to you. No more than that, but also never less. The curriculum you set up is therefore determined exclusively by what you think you are and what you believe the relationship of others is to you. In the formal teaching situation, these questions may be totally unrelated to what you think you are teaching. Yet it's impossible not to use the content of any situation on behalf of what you really teach and therefore really learn. To this, the verbal content of your teaching is quite irrelevant. The verbal content of your teaching may coincide with what you are teaching or it may not. It's the teaching underlying what you say that teaches you. Teaching but reinforces what you believe about yourself. Teaching's fundamental purpose is to diminish self-doubt. This doesn't mean that the self you're trying to protect is real, but it does mean that the self you think is real is what you teach. This is inevitable. There is no escape from it. The self you think is real is what you teach. How can it be otherwise? Everyone who follows the world's curriculum, and everyone here does follow the world's curriculum until he changes his mind, teaches solely to convince himself that he is what he isn't. That's the purpose of the world. What else then would the world's curriculum be? Into this hopeless and closed learning situation which teaches nothing but despair and death, God sends his teachers. And as God's teachers teach God's lessons of joy and hope, their learning finally becomes complete. Except for God's teachers, there would be little hope of salvation, which is healing. But the world of sin would seem forever real. The self-deceiving must deceive, because the self-deceiving must teach deception. And what else is hell? This is a manual for the teachers of God. The teachers of God are not perfect, or they wouldn't be here. Yet it is their mission to become perfect here, and so teachers of God teach perfection over and over in many, many ways until they have learned perfection. And then they are seen no more, although their thoughts remain a source of strength and truth forever. So who are the teachers of God? How are the teachers of God chosen? What do the teachers of love do? How can they work out their own healing and the healing of the world? This manual attempts to answer these questions. So let's go back. That first paragraph, in order to make this really practical, let's think of it in terms of the relationships that we're in with people. The course says it looks like you're different from the person that you're teaching, and that in every relationship that we enter into, that we really, it looks like we give a teacher is giving something to the learner other than themselves, and it looks like the teaching is something that a teacher does just a little at specific times. Like if I was teaching math, then I only teach math from 8 to 5 when I'm at school. But the course is saying that the course is teaching that to teach us to learn. So the reason why people have a problem sometimes with learning stuff is that they don't realize that to demonstrate it is how you learn it. And that the course says that teaching and learning is going on all the time. That it's a constant process. The teaching and learning is going on all through the day. It's not something that we're doing at specific instances, like when we decide we're going to teach our child something. It's saying that teaching and learning goes on all day long. And then it gives us a definition of teaching, and it says to teach is to demonstrate. So when it's talking about teaching, it's talking about demonstrating. It ain't talking about talking. And most people think of teaching as talking. And so, and then it goes on to say, well, okay, we're going to be teaching. We're going to be teaching all the time. And then it says that there are only two thought systems, that there's only two ways of thinking. He says that there's only two ways of thinking, and that we're demonstrating one way of thinking or the other way of thinking all the time, and that everybody's learning from our demonstration, and so you're learning from your demonstration. So the reason why I think a lot of times people study stuff and then they get frustrated with it would be why? They're not demonstrating it. They're analyzing it, philosophizing about it, talking about it, but they're not living it. And he says others learn from demonstration, that I learn from demonstration. So it's demonstration that we learn through, and we are constantly demonstrating all the time. So he says we're teaching all the time. So he says the question isn't whether or not you're going to teach. The question isn't whether or not a person is going to demonstrate. He says actually you don't have any choice. He says you don't have any choice but to teach. You don't have any choice but to demonstrate because you live it. So all day long, just by what you're demonstrating all day long, you're teaching what you are and you're learning what you are. So if you really want to know what you've learned, it's really what you're demonstrating, not what you're saying, right? So it says the purpose of the course might be said to provide you with a means of choosing what you want to teach on the basis of what you want to learn. So what I want to demonstrate is what I want to learn. So everything that I want to learn has to be something that I'm willing to demonstrate. If I'm not willing to demonstrate it, would I learn it? Mm-mm. So he says you can't give, and then he says you can't give to someone else, you can only give to yourself. That's another very powerful statement. Because people have a tendency to think they're giving, whatever they're giving it to someone else. But the court says in universal law, whatever you're giving, you're actually giving it to yourself. And so you cannot give to somebody else. So you're only giving to yourself. And then you give to yourself through demonstrating, which it says this you learn through teaching. So teaching is nothing but a call to witnesses to attest to what you believe. Teaching is nothing but a method of conversion. But to convert, you don't do conversion by words. The way you convert is every time you enter into a situation, you see it as a chance to teach others what you are and what others are to you. That's it. So when I walk in here, then this situation that we're in right now is nothing but another chance for me to demonstrate to others what I am. And this is an opportunity for me to demonstrate to you what you mean to me. So when I leave out of here today, and we leave out of here today, and we go back into our personal labs, then when we go back into our personal labs, every situation that we go into is just going to be another opportunity for us to demonstrate who we think we are and to demonstrate who we think people are to us. And then the course takes it a step further and says, let's keep it simple. There are only two things you're going to demonstrate. You're either going to demonstrate love or you're going to demonstrate fear, or you're going to demonstrate that you think you're innocent or you're going to demonstrate that you think you're guilty. Or you're going to demonstrate that you think they're innocent or you're going to demonstrate that you think they're guilty. So thereby, I'm teaching myself I'm innocent or I'm guilty through the way that I demonstrate in every situation and circumstance in my experience. That's what teaching is. He says teaching is demonstrating. So, anybody have any thoughts or comments about that?
Yes, on my journey, it seems like it's so. I demonstrate a little bit more love,
mm-hmm.
right, toward myself or toward others. And then there's mm-hmm. other times where it doesn't go so well.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I know when I'm on track. That's the good thing.
That's a breakthrough in itself. Most people have no idea.
Why am I not choosing peace? Oh my God, it's an avalanche here.
Mm-hmm.
But then I take a deep breath, or the next day, I can choose again. I can choose again in that moment, just knowing I went to see the Dalai Lama. And I said, choose again. And we forget we can choose again every moment. Sometimes it takes a day, sometimes it's a moment.
Funny thing about the statement that you're saying is that, that's very true. You said sometimes we forget we can choose again. And I like to add to that, sometimes we have to choose again, over and over and over and over and over again. It's like a person getting up in the morning and say a workbook lesson one time. or could you imagine getting up in the morning and breathing once for the whole day? It doesn't happen like that. And so truth is something that has to be demonstrated over and over again. You have to choose once again, over and over and over and over and over again. But the cool part about it is that the mind gets programmed. So if you continue to choose over and over again, you'll get to the point that your mind will start making their choices without you having to stop and consciously. Like now, I don't have to as much as I used to have to stop and go, oh yeah, let me remember that's a call for love. More and more it's becoming, you know what, that's a call for love. Oh, there's another call for love. There's another chance for me to remember the truth. It's not like, oh, let me remember. That's another chance for me to remember the truth. Because if you do it long enough, then your mind will start to apply that automatically to the situations. Yeah, yeah.
I'm going through, what are you for? She said, like,
yeah.
Don't
yeah.
you laugh when I'm mad.
Yeah. I forgot what you're for.
What are you for?
Right, exactly. What is the purpose of what is your purpose in my experience? What are you for? What have you given to say, Joel?
Hey, I just read the part on the feast later in the book this morning, and it's so good and just related. And so I was thinking the way over, that the more you are, the more there is for everyone. Saying this is a feast like no other. The more that you, and so you get to think yourself as a feast. The more you are, the more light, the more love, the more everything, the more there is for everybody. I love that.
That's the only reason why a person would want to give. The only reason why a person would want to give is if they felt like through giving that they were going to increase it for themselves and others. That's why I think people don't. The quote says that most people think of giving as losing. Mm-hmm. That I've given you something, now I don't have it anymore. And then the Spirit's law says the more that you give, or even the more that you receive, the more it is for everybody else to receive.
Well, and it's different too than the, because you got the old ego thing where it's trying to make you big or whatever, and then that's everybody else little. But the spirit way where you're big is wonderful because it's so inclusive.
I just read
the section and it helped me a lot. It reminds us in the course over and over, we're not talking about you have to go give up anything in the physical world.
Mm-hmm.
Just understand what its true value is, which mm-hmm. is nothing but... And it talks about the ego has taught us just like the giving, because in the form world there is a limited amount,
mm-hmm.
and so the ego, we've taught ourselves that to give does mean not to share and
mm-hmm.
create more.
Mm-hmm.
It does mean to lose, whereas when we share love, which is all that's true, it's opposite.
Yeah, he talks about that in chapter 5 about the Holy Spirit, when he was talking about, when you give a finite thing away, it does look like you don't have it, but it's the idea behind it that created it in the first place. And so if you look at it as if it's symbolic of an idea, then you never lose, because that idea will continue to recreate and recreate. And so even at a finite level, ideas can keep reproducing. Like some of you may not realize it, but you probably have accepted the idea of food at such a core level that even if you tried to starve, you probably wouldn't. You probably would. We're so used to it, that idea would probably still attract to us, because it's the idea that's creating the reality and not the other way around. It's the ideas that's behind everything. It's the idea that's real. And so sometimes when people study the course, they forget that it's only talking about perception and ideas. And they get upset because they think that something physical that they wanted to occur didn't happen. And sometimes in terms of your spiritual development, it's not to your advantage to have a physical change that you even think you want. So in some cases, like some people say, well, is it? Yeah, it's funny. Like some people think, well, if I got this right, then if I got an illness, then that illness would disappear instantly. And the truth is, at this level, what it's teaching us is a new perception. It's not about whether the illness leaves; it's whether or not I can see it correctly. So the course is all about perception. It says it over and over again: perception, perception, perception. Because my perception is determining my feelings. Anybody else about the first two paragraphs?
It's not always natural for me.
What's not always natural for you?
Some of these, you know, to monitor what I'm giving.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't become natural always for me. I just kind of react still sometimes, and then I catch myself, you know. A lot of times I just haven't been saying anything. I just been quiet, which is amazing.
That might be a major change.
That might be a major
improvement. I was amazed at how much more peaceful.
I don't know what to say. I don't know what it's for. I don't know what it is.
That's a brilliant response. Yeah. That's a great response.
I don't say anything.
Great. I wish more people would say nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I think the world would be a much more peaceful place if more people would just be quiet, especially if they're feeling upset and they're angry or they're misperceiving. I feel like if you can be quiet, that's a brilliant response. You know? Yeah. No, it's not natural yet. It hasn't become a habit. He calls it a habit in your problem-solving repertoire. I think he says that. It hasn't become a habit in your problem-solving repertoire.
Well, how do we get out of our own way? Like, it doesn't seem natural because you're always, you know, you got these ideas in your mind, so that's your mind. So where is it? Does the ego dissolve when I let spirit through?
You let ego dissolve as you forgive. You let ego dissolve as you recognize
if
that.
If I choose not to say anything when I'm angry. Yeah. Those little bits.
Yeah. It's just what you say. What would be the point? Think about it, though, y'all. What would be the point of studying this if we already knew how to do it? It doesn't make any sense for us to get upset with ourselves because we don't perfectly do it, when the whole purpose of studying this is so that we can learn how to do it.
And get out of our own way.
Yeah, and that's what getting out of your own way is. But what I found it to be is acceptance. It's like, if you would accept you had an ego, you could go a long way towards your ego not ruling you. The language says stop trying to humble it, stop trying to control it, stop trying to destroy it. And so people get into this battle. The ego is smart. People study the course. In order for the ego to preserve itself, what it does is it makes people believe that it's all about getting rid of their ego and getting mad at themselves about their ego, which is purely reinforcing the ego. Yeah. So all of a sudden it's all about my ego. But that's your ego getting upset at itself, because your real self would never get upset about nothing your ego did. Your real self would not even give your ego any reality. So it's only your ego that's getting upset about itself anyway. You know, and so it's not really you that's getting mad. It's not really you that's getting depressed. That's just your ego's game to keep itself going. And so that's all I'm really doing all day, is either identifying with my ego or identifying with spirit. You know, either I'm identifying with my ego, and in that case I'm beating myself up about every little thing that I do.
Judging it.
Or I'm identifying with my spirit and going, oh, that's my call for love. That my ego is doing it again. Oh, okay, I'm upset about something. Ooh, what else is new? Because there's always something. As long as my happiness is going to be dependent on something outside of myself, it's going to always be something to upset me. I can count on it. And your ego just changes from one thing to another. First it was my boss. I thought I got to handle. Now it's my feet too big. You know what I'm saying? Now I wish I had a better job. Now I wish my car. You know, just notice it. All it does is just hop around from one thing to the other thing to the other thing to the other thing. So what is this section? But let's go back to what the purpose of this section is saying. The purpose of this section is trying to get us to understand that everything that we want to learn, that we got to demonstrate, and that every situation that we're in is another opportunity to demonstrate what we say we are, and is another opportunity to demonstrate what you are to me. Okay.
You've been a great demonstrator for me.
Well, you've been a great demonstrator for me too. Well, I'm gonna tell you about me. I guess each person in here knows the degree of their sincerity, but you know, it's much easier to live the way the course suggests than to live the way the world suggests. In the beginning, it always seems like it's the opposite. It seems like it's, oh man, I'm trying to live this course stuff and it's the hardest thing in the world. But actually, living what the world teaches is the hardest thing in the world. doing it the way the world teaches you to do it is the hardest thing. This is not hard. You know, it's much easier for me to teach me than to teach you. It's much easier for me to change my mind than to change your mind. It's much easier for me to have tolerance for myself than to constantly attack myself. You know what I'm saying? When you really think about it, everything that it's saying is just different, but it's easier than what we've been taught. I can't control you, Michael. So if I set my happiness up that I could control you, don't you see that's a losing proposition? But that is exactly the way the world sets up everything. And if you talk to your friends and your relatives and everybody you know, generally they're upset about things that are beyond their personal control. It has nothing to do with owning their experience, saying I'm the one that's responsible for my feelings, I'm the one that's got to choose to be happy, I'm not going to blame you for what I'm going through. But I understand that it's hard at first because that's what we learned at first. So let's look at the other
thing. We still do it ourselves.
I always tell people if you can see me, I'm still learning. And if I can see you, I know you're still learning. So I don't really care about what people say about how you're equal with Deepak Chopra. You're equal with the Dalai Lama. You're equal with Jesus. If you see the Dalai Lama, then the Dalai Lama also is learning. You know what I'm saying? And so be aware of putting people up on pedestals. Because if you see them in the physical world, they are still learning. They may have learned more, but they're still learners. So I love how the course says, and we're gonna be working on the teacher's manual in this class for a while. And what's interesting is that he says there's only one level, the learning level.
Happy learner.
Yeah, and I love that thought. He says you want to know what level of consciousness everybody's on? They're on the learning level. So therefore, everybody's on the same level. You know, we're on the learning level. And that immediately, like, equalized everything for me. So I can be around anybody now and be open to them, but I'm certainly not in awe of them. Mm-hmm. You know, like, people get in awe. And it's like, no, that's my brother, the Dalai Lama. That's my brother, Deepak. You know what I'm saying? That's my sister, Mother Teresa. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you got to get to that level, because he says the miracle comes out of equality. The miracle doesn't come out of seeing something that's unequal to you. The miracle comes from seeing each other as the same.
Even Jesus tries to remind us.
All the time. All the way through the book. And then he says it in the Bible. I mean, even people who read the Bible, I mean, it's right there in the Bible. He says that, you know, he identifies himself as a brother. Mm-hmm. And then he always says, whatever what I do. You can even do greater things than this. Mm-hmm. He says, you are God's. I mean, all that's right in the Bible. Just take the course out of the way and just read the New Testament. And he's got all these statements about some people he couldn't heal. People overlooked that too. There was something, and he would tell them, well, you know, because of your faith. You know? Yeah, if you weren't open to it and you weren't ready to accept that healing, then it doesn't happen for you. So we're constantly being reminded that we are these incredibly powerful beings who have confused ourselves with our physical identity, our separated self. And so now we think we are these human beings that have these limited lives that's out here trying to make it every day. And it doesn't have to be that hard. We're just like the lilies of the fields and all that stuff that it talks about in the Bible, about how, you know, they're taken care of and they're not trying to earn money. You know, they're not. They're taken care of. And you can live that way and we can live that way. But the guilt gets in the way. That idea that we are not worthy. I'm not worthy.
Can I ask you one question about that? Just because you just about to read that 350, The Forgiven World, which is so beautiful. Now you're switching over. I know you're going to say it's by guidance and all that. So I'm looking forward to that. And I was just wondering if there's
I'm still going to be working on chapter 17 in the Thursday class and the Sunday class. Mm-hmm. I just want some variety. I want to have a class I can just jump around and hit some stuff. And then since we discuss more, and it's usually smaller on Wednesday, I thought Wednesday would be a good place to get into more dialogue and go into interesting places. Yeah. Because the forgiven world is so beautiful, mm-hmm. It's going to be the class that most people are going to go the most unconscious on. Trust me, after 26 years. I'm serious. You want to see? You think people go unconscious? Say the completely loving stuff, and they go right out. Unless they've done a lot of work on themselves. I've found that unless a person has done a lot of work, and starts removing their blocks, mm-hmm. very difficult for them to hear the loving thoughts. Have you ever been in a relationship with somebody who had very low self-esteem and it was a constant battle every time you tried to tell them something loving or be kind or anything? They just fought it. They couldn't receive it. It really takes more spiritual development to handle the love, to let the love in. We're very practiced at complaining, judging, not feeling enough, and not accepting our recognition. People can hang there, but when you start shooting out the love, that's when you really will observe defenses come up. That's when people start to get the most suspicious. Yeah, I had to learn how to actually pull it back. Because I would be with people, and I would very sincerely say what I was seeing, and they could take it for about 10 minutes. But after that, they would start to suspect that either you were not telling the truth or you had some kind of an ulterior motive. You know.
Salesman.
Yeah, especially in relationship especially in relationships like if I was going out or had met someone for the first time, and you start sharing from a loving place, it's amazing how fast they go into suspicion, unless they themselves are awakening. And that's the difference. Now, if it's somebody who's also in an awakening process, to them that's a clue that you are someone to connect with. Someone who's still got unresolved issues tend to feel fearful. So it's almost better to be in what you said earlier, to be in an open and receptive listening posture, and one where you're being interested instead of trying to be interesting. You know what I'm saying? Because people, very seldom have people give them 100% attention. That in itself is impressive. The fact that they're sitting in front of you and you actually listening to them and could actually say back to them what they said, that really freaks people out. Because many people, when a person is talking, they're thinking about what they're going to say next. They're not actually 100% present. They're thinking about how they're going to respond or what they're getting ready to say. They're not really just there with you. And so if I'm sitting with you, right, then the situation that I'm in is an opportunity for me to demonstrate to you what you are to me. And what you are to me is my brother. And you're important enough to me for me to listen to what you have to say and be supportive of you. And in doing that, I'm teaching myself that I'm the same thing. So that's the practicality of this. And like this is really great. This next paragraph says that the curriculum you set up is determined exclusively by what you think you are and what you believe the relationship of others is to you. And that in a formal teaching situation, he says, that could be totally unrelated to what you're teaching. I could be teaching you math, but that may not have anything to do with what I think I am. So in a formal teaching situation, you can be teaching things that don't seem to have anything to do with what you are. He says, but it's impossible to use the content of that situation, not to use the content of that situation on behalf of what I really teach and what I really learn. I wish I could put this on a poster. The verbal content of your teaching is quite irrelevant. I said it again. The verbal content is irrelevant.
Good thing, huh?
Well, because think about how much time you spend trying to say just the right thing. Mm-hmm. And it's really, and really he says that what I'm saying to you is really irrelevant. What I'm saying to you may or may not coincide with what I'm teaching and learning. It is the teaching underlying what I say that teaches me. So if I'm going, Michael, I think you're a really cool guy, and I'm saying that to you, but beneath that I'm going, you know, the truth is I really don't like Michael at all. I think Michael isn't really a great guy. Okay, it's what I'm telling myself behind what I'm saying to you that's affecting my consciousness. So it's good to say loving things, and I'd rather say something loving than something unloving. But in terms of my own consciousness level, is the level of what I'm telling myself behind what I'm telling you. That is my level of consciousness. And that blows people away too, because people can say a lot of things that they know they don't feel. Like, for instance, if you say, Earl, how are you doing? And I go, oh, I'm doing fine. That's verbal. But in the inside, I'm feeling depressed, and I'm feeling suicidal, and I'm feeling afraid. That's what I'm teaching myself. What I'm teaching myself is whatever I'm saying to myself behind what I say to you.
I like what you said, the teaching under the line.
Yeah, it's the teaching under the line. Yeah, it's the teacher, right. And so when you think of it that way, let me throw this out to the group. Based on that statement, what are you learning? In your own personal experience, does what you say pretty much coincide with what you feel, or do you still feel that a lot of what you say is what you want to experience, or what you want to be true, or what you believe you should say? Well, what's happening underneath? You know, like right now, what are you telling yourself right now about this moment? Because whatever you're telling yourself right now is what you're learning. That's what you're learning. It's the whatever you believe in, whatever you're focusing on right now. And that's important. So therefore, I try to answer people. Well, I do try to answer people verbally in terms of what I'd like to experience. Right? He talks about that too later on in the book, about when someone asks you for something, pause for a moment and think about before you answer them, because what you say to them is what you're asking for. And then the other half of that is what I'm telling myself beneath what I'm saying is what's teaching me. So again, it kind of puts the focus right back on it's all coming back to me, where most people do it how? They really think that what they're saying to the other person is what's important, and not what they're saying to themselves about the other person.
And it can work good the other way too, though, because if you're in a habit, you might say something that was in your old habit, and then immediately after that you go, oh, I don't think that anymore, or I'm changing, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Recognize it, and then you get to do the opposite.
Mm-hmm. And it's like either way you do it, you're not teaching yourself. Right.
And there's so many levels of relationships. Like, you know, they become more real with people, like with you and I, that I could say really loving things and be present.
Mm-hmm.
And then at work and acquaintances, it's like it's the teaching under the line more so, you know. People say, how you doing? Fine. Because, you know, it's just too much time to explain or whatever it is and get them on the journey to be my authentic self.
I feel like that telling somebody who is not conscious of the truth that you're finding is a smart thing to do. Really, because people who don't know the truth, then they give reality to what you say that's of a fearful nature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you tell them that you are miserable today, then they see you as what you're saying.
Yeah.
They don't see you as the child of God that's calling for love. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of times, I've found they don't really care.
They don't.
Okay, I mean, let's just get real. I mean, they're not really like obsessing about whether or not you're doing fine when they ask you how you doing. It's almost like a little polite, just a polite gesture. It has nothing to do with they sincerely want to know that, you know, you might get evicted 3 days from now. You know what I'm saying? Especially if they think you might be hitting them up for some money. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, but again, when we go back to, like I said, when we go back to what the section is saying, which really is what I would like to do, is like when we go through a section, like what is the section itself trying to get us to realize? Like that paragraph, the verbal content of your teaching is quite irrelevant. It may coincide with it, it might not. It's the teaching underlying what you say that teaches you. Here's another classic sentence. Teaching but reinforces what you believe about yourself. So if teaching is demonstrating, then that's the same as saying what? Demonstrating but reinforces what you believe about yourself. So the fundamental purpose of teaching, and I love this, is to diminish doubt about yourself. So the more I demonstrate who I am, the less doubt I'm going to have. The reason why I'm pretty sure Earl is a pretty loving person is because Earl demonstrates love as much as he possibly can. And I notice the more I do that, the less I doubt that I'm a loving person.
That's the core of that paragraph, to demonstrate.
Right. That's what I love to do. It's like to come together to get what's the core message that Spirit is trying to give us out of whatever section that we're reading.
All the time, as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's just about remembering. I just think I can remember a little bit more. If I just can go, I'm sustained by the love of God, or different thoughts come into my head during the day, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? If I can just remember just a couple things, I'm doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really trying to let go of some of the judging thoughts, and that's been such an experience. When I, like you said, just let the majorette walk, you know, pass by, don't get a restraining order, or anything. Just watch it go by, you know, and they're just thoughts, and that way, how I judge that thought is going to make how I feel. That was a big one for me.
The judgment of the thought was just like
the next piece or the next thing that, you know, as you kind of go through the day.
It's so good to know that somebody hears me.
but when you kind of apply it, it's different.
Oh, yeah. You can always tell a person who's applying the truth because a person who's applying the truth is going to become disoriented.
They're going to become confused.
They're going to have some challenges at first, because thinking it and living it is two different things. Always, it's just so much easier to. That's why people like to sit around and talk about the truth. But to actually get into a room full of people who say, you know, all this week I really applied that idea of it really is a call for love when this situation come up, and they tell you about what they experienced as a result of that, is totally different from someone philosophizing, you know, to actually go out, like you said, and be quiet where you normally would have said something. That's, to me, that's applying the truth. You know, if I come into this situation, it's amazing if you just had an attitude in your mind that I'm showing up to give and receive love. And you don't have to say anything to anybody. You just walk in the door with that attitude. It's amazing the things that happen.
It's trying to make it simple sometimes. I get so complex, and it seems like the Course can make it so clear, so simple. But that's so foreign to me.
I know.
You know, that I'm so over the board and judging and going all around and everywhere, you know. And I don't have to do that.
I tell you, brother.
I know
what you're saying. But you know, the problem with something being simple and clear is that it takes away all excuses for not using it. One of the advantages of complexity is that it gives you endless amounts of time to stall around. So the more complex it is, the longer you can wait to apply. But when you get it, but when you get it simple, then you have to admit you're just choosing not to do it. But you can't pretend that you don't know what to do. But you have to own you're just choosing not to do it. But if it's complex, if I got to go through 20 astral planes, you know what I'm saying? If I got all these complicated things I got to do, then I can stall. But for me to walk in here and go, okay, Earl, this is another opportunity for you to demonstrate who you are and what other people are to you. And what you are saying to them is really what's important. It's what you're telling yourself is what you're learning, and that you're teaching and learning all the time. So what do you want to demonstrate would be what you want to experience. So you need to come in here and you need to show up given what it is you want to experience. See, that puts the buck right where it stops on me. Mm-hmm. But if I want to complicate it, I'd make it all about figuring all of you out. And then trying to decide whether or not it's okay for me to try to do it, or should I try to do it, or are you going to take it the wrong way, or will you perceive me correctly, or will you get upset? See, the minute I get into that, that's a delaying maneuver. The minute I try to get into analyzing your motives, analyzing how you're going to respond, you know, or even being attached to the way you respond. That's the other big one. Is that, okay, I'm going to walk in, I'm going to be loving, but now you got to be loving back to me.
That's a big one.
You know, because we want people to respond. The average person wants rewards. As soon as I'm a little bit nicer, I want everybody to be treating me nicer. It's like, it doesn't necessarily work that way. You're giving to yourself. They're giving to themselves. They may give to themselves for the fear or for the anxiety by attacking you. But that didn't stop you from giving yourself more peace by being peaceful with them. So you always won. You always win regardless of what the other person is, how the other person is reacting. If you're only giving to yourself, how can I lose?
And you win instantly.
It's instant.
No,
you don't have
delay.
To wait. No delay. Right. I stay peaceful.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, on an intellectual level, I understand that all miracles are equal.
Mm-hmm.
But getting it,
mm-hmm.
some of my lessons are just a whole lot harder.
Yeah.
And my desire to be willing is there.
Yeah.
But to simply go, okay, it's all fine. You know, it's like, I go into another room and I'm like, okay, I call him J Dude because I spent a hard time with the Holy Roller version. So I'm like, okay, J Dude, some help here.
Yeah.
Any techniques for me here?
There you go.
I'm in that early.
See, that's brilliant.
Hey.
That's brilliant, but that's
but
all.
It kind of like poof, automatically goes. So the little my perceived easier ones or little ones or.
I'm telling you, if it was anything that after all these years of working with people, that I could say would be, when you can make it okay with yourself to feel your anger, to feel your anxiety, to feel your upset, and not to feel that you have to immediately go into the space of peace, you will speed to peace faster than any other way. It, one of the biggest challenges is that somehow or another, it's very common to get transferred to people that I should be able to have peace in every situation. Yeah, that's the ultimate goal. But it's not realistic in terms of where we are now. That's why he goes. That's why the whole path is a path of forgiveness. Because forgiveness is really seeing what you're doing is a call for love. It's a correct perception. So forgiving myself is to recognize that I'm still innocent. If I'm mad, I'm innocent. If I'm upset, I'm innocent. If I can't smile right now, I'm innocent. I'm innocent about feeling upset with myself. You know, so one of my biggest breakthroughs was just to feel my feelings without judging them. You know, this is how I feel right now. Right now that, I smashed my car up against a post in Bennett. And man, I was upset about that. Now, the stupidest thing for me to do would have been to sit up there and lie to myself and pretend I wasn't upset in order to be spiritual. Because I would have felt that anger, and then that anger would have come out in other ways. It would have come back at me in other ways. It would have created more things for me. It was much better to go, I'm making myself really upset about this right now, and I'm feeling this right now, and I'm not happy that I smashed my car. I'm not going to pretend that I'm happy that I smashed my car, and that's my call for love. And I feel it, and I acknowledge it, and then within 24 hours, I was cool. But in the old days, at the very beginning, I would have tried to pretend that I was not upset about that. Or feel like, because your idealized self is one of your ego's greatest defenses. Did you know that? What I mean by that, your ideal self, and then always judging yourself because you didn't act according to your ideal self, is one of the biggest delaying maneuvers on the spiritual path. Because we make up these ideals. My ideal is that I'm never upset about anything. Okay? That's because I'm perfect. And so now I feel upset because I smashed my car, so therefore I'm supposed to feel guilty because I've been on A Course in Miracles, so you're not supposed to get upset. Mm-hmm. See, so what did I just do? I just reinforced my ego.
Through the course.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm saying. Exactly. So the best way in the world not to reinforce your ego is to feel your feelings without judging them as bad. Yeah, it's like I'm not judging them at all. You know, this is just how I feel. And if you're going, like he says, if you're going to judge it at all, he tells us, well, judge it as a call for God. Judge it as a call for love. You just got to use judgment, then go, this is my call for love, and my call for love took the form of me feeling upset because I smashed my car. That way you're not denying your feeling, and you're at the same time seeing it for what it really is. Because as long as you're in human form, you're going to have these different feelings and emotions come up, and if you set it up that it's not okay, I'm telling you, just take my word for it, it's going to make your ego bigger, not smaller. I've watched people use the truth to make their egos gigantuan. You know, it's like the average person will walk in and say, you know, I really hate my father. I feel like my father did something to me, and I hate my father, and I want you to help me see that another way. A true student won't do that. A true student would rather die, the average true student, than tell you, I hate somebody. You know that's true. How did the average true student, how are you doing? Fine. I love everybody. Everything's beautiful. I feel one with all that is. Yeah? Okay.
And disappear.
Then why you got all this drama in your life? Why you got all this? Then you dig a little deeper, they usually always got drama up the yin-yang. Because they're in such total denial, and they're covering up all their feelings with this positive thinking, rather than realizing if they're truly innocent, then all their feelings are innocent, and it's okay for them to feel what they feel. And why wouldn't you want to? Why wouldn't we want to hear that it's okay to feel what you feel? You ever thought about that?
Well, there's consequences. I mean, it's scary.
to feel what you feel.
Well, and to articulate it. Like, mm-hmm. For example, I've got a perfect situation in my life right now, and, you know, I've gone back to work today after 3 months being on disability, and I thought I'd be terminated because, okay, I didn't call in, and, mm-hmm. You know, but I'm not. I get to do my job. Well, the job is physically painful to me,
mm-hmm.
So my truth is to tell my boss I want to be terminated, you know?
Mm-hmm.
why is that so frightening to do? I mean, most people are trying not to get terminated. I want to tell you how it's terminated. You know, it's like that would be the truth. That would be the simplest way. Mm-hmm. And yet there's a lot of fear around just,
That's what I'm saying, though. For you to say, I feel fear about saying that, is what I'm saying. That is what's good, is the fact that you're willing to just say how you feel about it. I've got to make this choice, I've got to do this, but this is how I feel about it right now.
Yeah.
Because that is honoring yourself. That's being in integrity.
Yeah.
You know, and all feelings don't necessarily feel good, but it doesn't mean that they're bad.
Yeah.
And that's the difference.
I was judging mine as a lack of willingness.
Mm-hmm.
We read the section about willingness. Mm-hmm. I'm trying, damn it.
Yeah. I'm willing, damn it.
I'm trying.
Okay.
I was just going to say one quick thing. Mm-hmm. That, for me, when I would be in a place like that, and I knew I couldn't get out of it, I would just be able at least to say, I'm so glad I'm wrong. You know what I mean? I'm so glad I'm wrong about this. And that was it. That was enough.
I'm just
so dated
here. I'm handing it to you
because
I don't know what to do with it.
There you go.
And what's so cool is I'm saying that both of you are right. See, that's the other thing, too. It's like we all can be right. It isn't an either-or situation. It's mm-hmm. the most brilliant thing you can do is, you have said, take it to the Holy Spirit. And exactly what you said a minute ago about, I hope that I'm wrong. See, all of those are correct. Mm-hmm. And all of those ways work. And what you're looking for is the particular way that resonates with where you are in this particular moment.
Yeah. Because, of course, it's all about perception.
It's all about perception. So anything that gets us to a perception that helps us get back to our innocence is the right perception. Is the
not
right
about
perception.
Behavior. It's about perception.
It's about perception. It's not about behavior. It's not about behavior. It's about the way you perceive things, you know. It's really going to fail. I'm a little perception challenge. And then he says on the next page, I love this too. He says everybody here follows the world's curriculum, and everybody here follows it until what? They change their mind. And he says, so until you got on your spiritual path, you were teaching solely to convince yourself that you are what you are not. It's like before you get on the spiritual path, everything you're doing is demonstrating that what you're not. Right? And so he says that's the purpose of the world. See, the purpose of the world or the purpose of the ego is to constantly deceive us about who we are. And the Course reduces that to something real simple too. A victim. That's all. That's all it said, is that the world is trying to teach us what we're not. A victim. And that's why people love it when you blame. People of the world... You want to get agreement? Say something that has to do with projection and blame, and see how many people are chime in and say you're right. Like you go, it's my boss's fault. Blah 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 blah. And the rest go, that's right, man. He is always doing. You said it's like the world. You know, men are no good. Yeah, that's right, man. Women are no good. Yeah, man, that's right. You know, it's hard for women in America. Yeah, that's right. You know, so it's like when the blame, the world. Now, but then you walk into a room. And let's say your car gets smashed and you say, you know, I created that. And see how many people chime in. You find that people don't chime in as fast when you take responsibility. When you go, I'm making myself feel the way that I feel right now. I'm giving myself this up. They're not really doing anything to me. That's me making myself upset about my boss. No, because that's not the world. That's not the teaching of the world. The teaching of the world is that it's your fault. And so the world chimes in with that. So the world is trying to teach us that we are what we're not. Victims. And then it says down here, I love this, it sounds like a cavalry coming in. It says, into this hopeless enclosed learning situation, which teaches nothing but despair and death, God sends his teachers. Da-da-da-da-da. You know, you can just see it. You know, into this hopeless enclosed, the Henry and Chuck come. It says, God sends his, what does that mean? Love, God, love, sends its demonstrators. Love sends its demonstrators. And to teach what? Love's lessons of joy and hope, which means to demonstrate. Love's lessons, then your learning becomes complete. So every time you're happy and every time you're joyful and you show it, that's how your learning becomes complete. We had our joy much more than we had our upset. people will tend to let you know when they're upset with you a lot faster than they'll let you know when they are really grateful to you. It's funny. It's like, for instance, let's say in the run of a month, several hundred people, 200 or 300 people might come through all my classes, okay? If 5 of those people called David and said that they were upset with me about something, then it would seem like there was some problem with Earl's class. Because the 80% who totally loved it probably not going to call David and say, I really enjoy it. You know, so the point that I'm making in that is that we tend to make people more aware of our dissatisfaction than satisfaction. And so if I'm with you and you see me pleased and you see my joy in being in your presence, then that is bringing joy and hope into where there is despair and where there is death. We need to allow people to share in our joy more and to see our happiness more. Even if they're tempted to compare themselves. You know, like, right, if things are going pretty good for you and a lot of people in your circle are going through a lot of challenges, the temptation would be to not let them know how good things are going for you, because people have a tendency to, when they're in fear especially, to compare themselves as opposed to being happy for your joy. They'll go, oh God, you know, what's wrong with me? You know, how come I can't have that? But I used to be tempted to fall for that. But what I'm realizing now is that they need to see, you have to rub their nose in it, but they need to see that you represent the alternative, that there is another way to look at this, and there is another way that you could be. And so he says, except for God's teachers, there would be little hope, because the world of sin or fear or sacrifice would seem forever real. He says, the self-deceiving must deceive. That's the, see, these are, to me, these are universal laws. You know, somebody who's lying to themselves are going to lie to you. So somebody that's deceiving themselves, they can't be honest. If they're deceiving themselves, certainly they're going to deceive you. You know, and he says they teach deception. He says that that's what hell is. Like, if you want to know what the Course in Miracles definition of hell is, not a place with fire and brimstone. It's a person that's fooling themselves, because you hurt yourself when you fool yourself. You know, if you're in a relationship and that relationship really turned out to be painful, if you look back on it, you probably say, "Boy, I really fooled myself. That it was something I deceived myself about. That's hurt. That's what hurt me." You know, or like right now, if I think I have lack, I'm deceiving myself about being the holy child of God. Totally out of fear. And then what's the trip about fear is that fear has a whole world that goes with it. A whole friggin' world.
A whole big complicated
world. That's what we got formed. That's what we got. But it's like, it's a trip to think that whole idea of separation produced everything that we're seeing. And that there's another world that we don't see that is not fearful. Mm-hmm. And the ego goes, oh, that's the dream.
So don't tell me my thoughts don't have a lot of power. Look what we did.
Look at this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, look at this.
Created.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Brilliant, aren't we?
Totally. And then spirit turns around and says, okay, let's bring it, let's take it back to neutrality. You know, like the lessons say, you know, that my thoughts aren't neutral, but the world is neutral. You know, so at the very least, let's go to neutrality now. Let's go to neutrality. Let's go to the world is neither good nor bad. You know.
And nothing in the world is good or bad.
And nothing in the world is good or bad. But my thoughts about the world are not neutral.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no such thing as a neutral thought, but everything is neutral. Which is interesting, because which goes back to what you were saying earlier about what I said about not judging your thoughts. Yeah, you got your thought, and then or your feeling, and then you're the one that judges that thought or feeling is okay or not okay. Yeah, yeah. So the last part of this paragraph says that I love this. It says we're not perfect or we wouldn't be here. 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 So why am I beating myself up? Why am I beating myself up? If I was perfect in my perception, I wouldn't be here in my perception. So he says, what is our mission? But our mission is to become perfect here. Now, the Course describes perfection as completion. So when it says perfect, it's talking about, it's my mission to be complete, to recognize my completion here. That I am complete. I'm whole. There's nothing missing in me. I'm perfect means I'm not. There's nothing missing in me. I'm complete. They're not going to do a recall. They say, Earl, I'm calling you back to the factory because you're missing something. You're complete. Now, my perception will determine whether or not I perceive it. But it doesn't have anything to do with it being true. But if I had complete perception, then I wouldn't be in a world where I think there's lack. That doesn't go together, you know? He says, and then, I love this too. This has been pretty mystical. It says that we teach our perfection over and over in many, many ways until we learn it. And he says, then they are seen no more. Although their thoughts remain a source of strength and truth forever. So we will reach a point where we are not physically seen anymore, but our thoughts of truth and strength remain forever. Just like Jesus. Jesus isn't seen anymore. But the strength and truth that he represented is still very much alive and well. So he says, who are they? How are they chosen? What do they do? And then it's going to go into the next section that we're going to go into. The section is called Who Are God's Teachers? So I'm going to stop here. It's just about 6 minutes to one.
Can I ask you one quick
question? Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
When you're talking about, you know, yes, the teachers are not perfect, that's why we're here, mm-hmm. teach perfection over and over.
Mm-hmm.
Is it just saying, you know, that practicing true forgiveness over and
yes,
over? Yes,
absolutely.
Because that's what I keep.
That's it.
Every single thing I keep hearing about,
it.
I'm just yes. more than constantly. That is my job every second of every day.
Exactly. And true forgiveness, which and truth and truth, right? True forgiveness is not trying to overlook what you think somebody did to you. True forgiveness is recognizing that you haven't lost your innocence. They haven't lost their innocence. Seeing it as a compliment. Matter of fact, any of the thoughts that you use from the book on that situation is forgiveness.
Did you ever go to Jack?
Because he has a whole different. The course has a whole different idea of forgiveness than what we learned.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's what you just said. Like going for the innocence, seeing it as a call for love. Not seeing it as a call
for love. It's my call.
Right. And not seeing yourself as a victim is forgiveness. Right. Because it's about the most greatest thing that is about what you think somebody is victim.
And then I went to Jack.
Thank you.
There are many lessons in the workbook where he says point blank, you know, feel your anger, feel your fear, feel your whatever, and then he says, then apply this thought to it. He never says don't. He says, he'll, all through the exercise, he'll say, pick out a person that you feel some kind of a grievance toward and then say blah, 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 blah. So just the opposite of what most people think is saying, it actually is telling you to become aware of it and then apply the truth to the situation and circumstance. So feel okay about that. Actually, I think that what we're doing is part one of every exercise. Because part one is always to bring up the ego, thought, feeling, and emotion. And then part two of the exercise is usually he gives you something to say about it, right? So if you're already upset, then you've already done part one. If you're afraid about something, you've already done. Now all you have to do is remember to do what? Just say the truth about it, which doesn't mean you're going to necessarily feel different. See, it doesn't mean you're going to feel different just because you say, I'm sustained by the love of God. What you're doing is reinforcing the truth within yourself, because you are sustained by the love of God, whether you feel like it or not. So I need it to be, that's my symbol of willingness to the universe. That's my way of showing the universe that I'm willing to be healed, is to say it. Not necessarily to always believe it or even accept it as true at first, but at least I'm saying it, which takes a little bit of willingness, mm-hmm. which is all that's required.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what it says. And that's what it literally says, a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so if you've got a little bit, then you on top of it, right? I mean, I just have what? A little bit of willingness to do this. Okay, that's all that is required.
4 cents on the dollar.
Hmm?
4 cents on the dollar.
That's all that's required. That's all that's required. See, you would have to be really accept your innocence to accept that.
Yeah.
It's so loving that my ego goes, you know, it just couldn't be this. It couldn't be this loving and this easy. I mean, spirit couldn't just accept me where I am. I've got to correct myself and then go to God. And then he has a whole section in chapter 18 that he talks about that. About stop trying to prepare yourself for God.
Mm-hmm.
Stop trying to prepare yourself. That's the Holy Spirit's job. That's not your job to prepare yourself. that when you're doing that, you're actually disobeying the instructions. You know, I want you to insincere to say this. You know, and what I mean by insincere to say it is if I say my Course in Miracles lesson, but I don't really believe it, well, that's what it said. That you didn't have to believe it. Just say it. Just say it.
I remember you said that over and over again in your classes, but I was watching the 9/11 stuff, mm-hmm. and there was a guy there, I think he was Middle Eastern or something, but he saw a plane coming in, mm-hmm. like right on his floor, I think. And he was talking on the phone, and he dropped the phone, and he says, "Okay, God, I can't do this, you take over." And he lived to tell about it.
That's amazing. I never heard anybody that saw the plane coming at him that lived.
Yeah, he was in the building. God, I can't do this.
He was in the building?
He was in the building, saw it coming in. He said, "God, I can't do this anymore, you have to do it."
Wow.
And I was like, oh, that's very coarse. Yeah. I need a plane flying in my house.
Right. I'd much rather get my lessons easy. So I tell Spirit all the time, I'm willing
to
get. I'd much rather sit up here and do a workbook lesson than see a kid coming at me.
Yeah.
So tomorrow night is the next class at 7, and
Sunday.
We're going to then Sunday. At 1 o'clock.
In the morning too, isn't it?
Yeah. Now I'm going to I'll be out of town next Wednesday, but I'll be back for the Thursday night class. If anybody here still wanted to come together and facilitate the class on Wednesday, then we could work that out, and you could still meet on Wednesday. If not, then we won't meet next Wednesday, and we'll be Thursday, and then we'll meet the following Wednesday. Okay. Is everybody? Okay.
You're not going to have it on Wednesday then?
Not next Wednesday.
Okay.
Joy does a course class on Thursday evening. So if you would do that, that would be great.
Good old time.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Okay.
So that. Or something like that.
I worked that.
Again. So you will be
here. I'll be here. You'll be here.
First of all, would anybody be here? So there's no point in her coming if nobody's going to be here.
If you only want a girl, I won't come. Okay.
I,
okay.